Terry will be introducing our guest speaker today. Oh, there's Donkey.
It is Monday, February 8th, 2021, and I have the privilege of letting you know something about Kathy Liska. She is an MCC, yes, CMC also, and CDP, and training director for the Center for Coach Certification. She volunteers, she has volunteered. I've seen her name way before I ever had the privilege of befriending her. She volunteers in leadership roles for and is the chair in ACTO and volunteers in leadership roles for ACTO and ICF and is currently the chair of the ICF Ethics Community of Practice, which stimulates continual learning. This is what she does. Stimulates continual learning in the field of coaching ethics, inclusion, and diversity. She is an international speaker, facilitator, and mediator. A prolific author of an annual coaching book. She is bright, both in intelligence and sparkle, and a wonderful person to have as a friend. I present to you Kathy Liska, sharing her knowledge and wisdom about the ethics of diversity. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you, Terry. And let's get all of this straight. Terry is a huge influence in so much of what I do and was such a huge supporter. Raphael knows this with the ACTO Ethics Committee and then, of course, with the ICF Community of Practice. So, yeah, really kudos to Terry on all of that. To me, this topic today is fun and absolutely essential that we be having this conversation. So if I may be so bold as to say, the way I see this is that we are in the dark ages. Anybody else feel like that? That we even have to have this conversation in this day and age tells us we're still living in the dark ages. What is up with that? Does anybody else feel like that? A few nods. To me, diversity is not an option. It really isn't. If you think about it ethically and morally, it just flat out is the right thing. It makes sense, and we've got to be there. What's going on in today's world is not acceptable. It hasn't been acceptable for hundreds of years, and it isn't acceptable now. Was that a pretty bold push? Some no. Okay. So our question, and by the way, absolutely love it. If you want to jump in, unmute, ask a question, challenge a thought, share an insight, whatever it is. This is about having a dynamic conversation. As far as I'm concerned, if we want to throw this PowerPoint out the window, we can do that. It's here as a guide, and if it helps, great. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. So what did we queue up? If we want to go there, here's what I've got ready for you. Talking about ICF and diversity. So what I'm pulling out is from the Code of Ethics, which points actually speak to diversity? Similarly, from the competencies, which points address diversity? From the PCC markers, what addresses diversity? And then I'm going to move into talking about doing good. So the Code of Ethics number 28 says doing good. I take that and I tie it to diversity, to social justice, because to me that's a big part of what doing good involves and entails. And so what I've been working on is the challenge that so many coaches come to me that they're facing. They're, you know, I'm one person. I'm one person in this big, vast world. How can I make a difference? Me, the little me, what can I do that's really going to matter? Some of you may have heard the story of a young child who's walking along the beach with their grandparent, and all these starfish have washed up on the shore. And the young child is picking up the starfish and throwing it back into the water. Picking up starfish and throwing it into the water. And their grandparent says, well, what are you doing? And the child says, well, if I leave it, it will die in the sun. I'm saving it. And the grandparent's looking down the beach and says, there's thousands of them. You can't possibly save them all. And the child picks up the next one and throws it in and says, saved that one. And while it's true that any one of us, we can't save it all, we can't do it all, we can do what we can do. We can make a difference where we have control, where we have influence, where we have the opportunity. And instead of being overwhelmed by the size of this challenge, let's explore what each one of us can do. So the thoughts I have, and of course, like you, I'm one person, so this is just where I'm at, starting. Is it perfect? Of course not. I'm human. Of course there's going to be mistakes. Of course I'm missing things. It's a starting point. So one of the first things for all of us to do is learn. Learn about this challenge, the ethics, the diversity, and what it is. Kathy, it looks like you want to say something. Go.
Is it okay with you if we record this?
Because yeah, I thought you were.
Okay. I just wanted to check with you, and everybody else is okay with being recorded.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you were recording from the beginning, so. Okay, so continuing. What can any one of us do? We can learn. We've got to educate ourselves. We can self-assess. Hey, where am I at? Where do I want to be? And build strategies. We can have that ongoing self-reflective practice, which is part of what our competencies now tell us to do. We can communicate openness in how we put ourselves out there. And we can work to expand access. Got a couple of examples at the tail end we can explore as well. So diving into the conversation specifically for you, what are the learning outcomes we're seeking out of this? We're going to review the points from the ethics, the competencies, and the PCC markers that are pertinent to diversity. We'll talk about this thinking that I've been working on for doing good, of learning, self-assessing, and strategizing, the self-reflective practice, communicating openness, and expanding access, and discuss the case studies. So I'm thinking I'm not going to read this to you. Is everybody okay if I don't read some of these things?
Yeah.
You're all familiar with death by PowerPoint, right? Yeah. Our job is to avoid that, right? So whoops. Let me go back to this. ICF has got it on their website. If you haven't seen it yet, you can visit their website and see it. The information is there. ACTO similarly has a stand around diversity and inclusion. And the idea is, to me, it's a very clear demonstration that more and more that awareness is growing. The little Pollyanna in me says, okay, let's take advantage of the opportunity we have right now in the world and really look at how we can create long-term, sustainable, meaningful change. This is a starting point. In terms of the code of ethics, which are the ones that specifically address diversity? And as I throw these out, I have a question to all of you, because really this is about making this as easy as possible for everyone. Is it helpful to actually read these points? Can I invite all of you to read them? Do you just prefer talking about them? What's the preference out there?
I think just talking about them, I think people can read them.
Okay, awesome. Sometimes we have somebody who can't see it. So let's go into it's there. It's for you. And I will share, I think there are several points from the Code of Ethics that address diversity specifically. Some of you may think that, okay, I'm not sure I agree with that. That's okay. And maybe you think I missed something, and I'm okay with hearing about that too. One of the things, in our code of ethics is addressing the power differential. And oftentimes we think about that because, hey, I'm the hired professional, and there's this theory of there being a power differential. And if you actually read it, it goes beyond the power differential based on what the professional relationship is, and it brings in other considerations as well. To me, this is one piece speaking to diversity. It talks about the appropriate boundaries. Now, many people coach face-to-face and many people coach virtually. Now, of course, during the pandemic, more and more it's virtual, whether it's on phone or Zoom. ICF has actually done the research now that the telephone or online without the camera is actually a better experience for the client, which is something we've been, at least in people I've been communicating with, we've been talking about that for a long time. So that does change the equation in terms of, is a handshake appropriate? Is a hug appropriate? What is okay? What isn't okay? And it's what's appropriate for the client compared to what I think is right or wrong for me. And then how do I balance it if it is different and work with that? Number 25, it's funny, I've had the good fortune of having many, many conversations. And even the word equality, what does that really mean? Because we talk about equity versus equality. We talk about removing barriers. Let's focus on the intent behind it, that we treat everybody with regard. I love 28. That's my favorite one in the new code of ethics. Is anybody else with me on this? I think this is so cool. This is so much bigger than the Hippocratic Oath. We're all familiar with the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. It's like, no. We got to proactively do good. That's a much bigger deal. Let's go there. So thoughts on the ones I have shared, thoughts on things you think I missed. Let's hear from you. I see Alan unmuted. Go, Alan.
Yeah, so I've had a lot of experience with cross-cultural work, being immersed in cultures, being the only American in an institution. And, you know, what I've learned is I just have to ask what works for the individual that I'm with. There's no way I can outguess the impact of my actions and words on that person without creating an open and respectful, you know, and it starts with what's respectful for you and what's respectful for me, and let's get that figured out, and then we can go from there. And when something occurs, then you can flag or I can flag, hey, something's going on here. Can we explore that a little bit to make sure we don't get off track? It's incredibly complicated. We're talking about emotions, we're talking about cultural lenses. It is very difficult to get it right without a partnership with the other person.
Yeah, 100,000% agree. It's, go, Raphael.
For me, I think it starts with self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So if I approach another human being and I am allowing myself to compare myself to that human being in terms of who's better or who's more educated or who has more authority, I am transmitting that. So for me, the journey of diversity and dealing with cultural differences begins by knowing that this human being in front of me is equal to me. I am not any better than the person standing in front of me. The only thing that changes are the circumstances and the opportunities we've been exposed to each other, but that doesn't inherently make that person make me any better than the person in front of me. And I think that as long as we carry that within us, that guides us through the rest. So diversity doesn't become an exercise in how do we do this. Diversity is just part of us being open to every human being.
Mindset, values, beliefs, attitude, Awesome. Very, very true. Okay. And Raphael, as you were talking about that, what I was thinking about is one of our competencies that specifically addresses this, and that embodies a coaching mindset. Because to me, the coaching mindset is truly being open and holding everybody in that regard. Yeah. So I'm going to go through them in order. I know that's the second one, so we know it's coming. I'll pull them up. And what I did is literally go through each of the competencies and look at the subpoints underneath them that seem like they speak specifically to diversity. And again, tell me your thoughts if you agree, disagree, or want to add to it, whatever it is. I think it's important to think about it, reflect on it, and pay attention to it. If you happen to have your copy of the competencies out, that, of course, will be incredibly helpful in looking at this. So under ethical practice, to me, there were 3 points specifically speaking to diversity. And I'm pausing because I want to give all of you a chance to say something, add to it, explore that. Give you a chance to look at it if you don't have a copy up. And give me a high sign when you're ready for me to move on. Are we good to go to the next one? I'm guessing you all know these, right? This is a group that knows this. Go ahead, Alan.
So I have a question. So these are competencies, and mm-hmm. how does one evaluate these? Let's say you've got a coach that's looking to, and we've got some people here that do this, that are looking to advance. How do you evaluate if someone is sensitive enough to clients' identity, environment, experiences, values, and belief, or is using respectful enough language appropriate? I mean, how do you do that? How do you grade someone?
I think that's a super tough call. I think about the training wheel for those who have gone through it, for the PCC assessing based on the markers. And it's, okay, so we have the markers as a clue to evaluate. And then the other side of me, Alan, is saying, okay, ever since I was a little kid, one of the things my mom always told me is that nobody died and put me in charge. Imagine that. Right.
It's actually not true. Sometimes we are in charge. It's okay.
Yeah, especially when I was orchestrating something with my dolls or whatever, right?
Right.
But I think the awareness is, we can pay attention to it. We can notice how we experience it. I think when you go through, for example, as an assessor, the training, they're talking about, we've got our intuition and our gut. At the same time, recently I had one of the coaches that I'm working with, they're doing their mentor coaching with me, and they were really frustrated because they got feedback that, hey, you're not connecting with this person. And they're like, okay, here's what they don't know. they were talking about that. So I think it's... I don't think there's a magic wand or a black and white answer to that, Alan. I think it's the coach has got to trust their own gut when they're working with clients, starting with that place of being open and doing the best of their ability. And then I think if we're assessing, we've got to trust our gut of, hey, what are we sensing? What's coming up for us here? Are we going to be right? Not always.
Terry's going to give us the right answer right now. So.
Yeah.
Well,
here
I'll
we
give
go.
An answer that I found works pretty well in different cultures, and therefore everyone is a different culture, right? I have learned to ask, what do you want me to know about you that would support me in the best way to giving you value? And this came from a coaching relationship with someone who was kind enough to say to me, when I asked that, was kind enough to say to me, in my culture, we don't acknowledge an individual. And I'm aware that in the last couple of meetings, you've been acknowledging me for the work that's being done. She said, that's very uncomfortable for me. We acknowledge the group or the community. And I said, thank you for letting me know. I didn't know that. And so that made me aware, and I've been using that in a few situations since. That's one way of getting into the conversation in advance.
Yeah. So I think I'm hearing a couple of things, opening the conversation with your client, and then also if you were in the position of having to assess somebody, and maybe I read something into it that wasn't there. If you're in the position of assessing a coach, we don't necessarily get to have the conversation with the coach or their client. We're simply listening to the recording. And so I'm hearing a couple of angles on that. I love that question, Terry. That's a good question. So embodies a coaching mindset. And this is actually a continuation, if you will, of what you were saying. The reflective practice, when we get into the piece on doing good, I've got a couple of things that I learned about from attending conferences and that kind of thing that I think are very cool to support the self-reflective practice. Coaching mindset being open and accepting. Under cultivates trust and safety, we've got actually three different things that to me spoke very specifically to the piece of diversity. Under listens actively, it's considering the client's context. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking to that. Evoking awareness has three points that speak to diversity. Whoops. And so I want to throw that out. What else? So I'm throwing up just very quickly points that to me speak to diversity in there. Are we good with that? Want to capture some from the PCC markers? Go, Terry.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of recent conversation on the ethics base camp about team coaching. I don't know how my question could be done in a team format. Can it? Would it work? Do you have to ask each member individually or do you ask the group? I'm clueless.
I think as a group question, it's asking the group, what do you as a group or as a team want me to know about you so that I can effectively support you? And making that invitation, hey, if somebody feels they have to address something individually, please let me know. Your challenge when you think about team coaching and the team coaching competencies is as soon as they move into that conversation with one person, what's the impact on the work with the team as a whole? And at the same time, part of me says, well, if I don't give them that opportunity, am I really, truly effectively serving the team? Because there may be something going on for one person that I've got to be aware of.
Effie?
Mm-hmm.
In the work that I've done with teams, I usually have several activities that I do to bring awareness of culture and diversity and how it impacts the team's productivity. So we do a lot of work around understanding where you are in the continuum of embeddedness or egalitarianism or the hierarchy versus harmony, things like that, and let everybody see where they are and how we have discussions on how might that impact our effectiveness. And so it's really a good idea to do this, not just with one person on the team, but the entire team, so that they can understand how they impact the team and how others are impacting them. And when you open up those conversations, it helps them to be very clear on it. It really does bringing it to their awareness helps them to deal with that.
Yeah. And Kathy, similarly, one that I think about depending on where the team is at, a good entree, if you will, to this kind of conversation is doing like the DISC profiles and then pulling the team report.
Yes. And some of the cultural work that has been done here recently in talking about different aspects of culture, and when you introduce it as beyond culture, it's how we were each brought up. What are the things that influence us from childhood on that makes us how we are? Because, you know, we do have certain broad things that are true for an entire culture. However, even within that culture, there are many, many differences. But you're looking at all these, like, there's nine different facets that you can look at that that really makes an impact on how people work together.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you familiar? Well, I'm sure you are, because I know you were active with ACTO too. Cultural bios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how many in this group are familiar with cultural bios. Just like a show of hands. Oh, so I see shaking heads. So the concept behind a cultural bio is you're basically introducing yourself in terms of your own culture and context. So if I wrote a cultural bio, I may talk about myself. Yeah, you know, the obvious that all of you can see, you know, the white lady, I live in a retirement community in Florida. You know, there's all kinds of stereotypes associated with that. My cultural bio will go beyond that. I may talk about growing up with first cousins that are black and first cousins that are Latino. I may talk about living in Argentina for a year. I'll talk about, hey, I'm married, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother. I'll talk about any number of different things that influence my context, my cultural experience, influence who I am. And the idea of the cultural bio is it's a way of putting yourself out there and being vulnerable and introducing all of those different elements, which opens others up to, okay, now they know who you are, and it creates a safety for them to also share more about themselves. Some of you are familiar with, for example, on LinkedIn, where people put their pronouns with their name. That's one way of saying, hey, I'm open to this. And I'm open to that conversation, and I'm putting myself out there and taking that risk. So, yeah.
I just wanted to say that the idea of a cultural bio really strikes home for me. It really strikes me as a very useful way to both articulate my background and all the lenses I've learned to use, and as well as encouraging others to share similar process. I see that could be very powerful.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's something I learned when I was serving with ACTO, is the cultural bio. Okay, so PCC markers. Let's cruise through these simply because we want to dive into the doing good concept. So the PCC markers that, to me, are speaking to diversity. And what's interesting about this is, in the PCC assessor community, there was this discussion, hey, do these markers address diversity? This is where I felt like they did, and I'm guessing different people have different opinions. I know that, actually, from that conversation in the assessor community. I think 4-3 speaks to it. 5-1, if we're acting in response to the whole person, of course that speaks to it. Being curious to learn more. One of the things that we've talked about in all the work around, for example, updating ACTO's code of ethics and putting together training the trainer of ethics was the whole question of cultural competence. And the point made being, how can I possibly be competent in every single culture out there? If I dedicate my entire life, I can't get there in terms of truly being competent. Can I be open and curious? I can be aware of some of the main tenets. I can be interested in learning more. And that's what I can do. Cultural humility is a term that we talked about. Asking based on what we know about the client, to me speaks to diversity, exploring how they perceive themselves and their world, asking about their way of thinking. I think all of this is speaking to who they are. Resources and supports are definitely influenced by culture and context for people. So to me, these are pieces from the PCC markers that very specifically speak to the diversity. So when I read our updated code of ethics, our updated competencies, our updated PCC markers, I'm excited. We've really got to be there. Back to coming out of the dark ages, right? Let's work toward that. I want to hold space here for a moment before I jump into the next section. Additional thoughts on the markers, the competencies, the code of ethics. Are we good here? Keep going. Okay. So doing good. And this is what I'm working on. I hope this is helpful. I hope it gives you some ideas. So the 5 points that I shared with you when we set up at the beginning, we're going to dive into each one in turn. In terms of the learning, we've got to do our homework. That means researching. It means reading. We can attend conferences and workshops specific to this, and even just having this kind of a conversation. All of it's important. Some of the fascinating things that I learned about, and I started this several years ago, digging into some of the different things, going, okay, you know, I think I know a little, and I know it's been a long time since I've really, dug into this, and so it's time for me to do some more. So I'll give you an example. One of the statistics I found that I think is fascinating. If you're in a car accident, women are 47% more likely to suffer traumatic injury. And the reason for that is cars are designed based on the male body. So there's an example of systemic bias that we don't even know about. We don't even think about it. It doesn't occur to us. Another big one here in the United States is a practice that is no longer legal. Back in the day, it was. So in the United States, when they first started building suburbs, they had a practice called redlining. Literally, they would take a map, they would take a red marker, and they would outline neighborhoods where they would not allow Black people to buy homes. And this is absolutely horrific to me. The federal government had a program to guarantee loans for first-time home buyers. They would not allow Black people to buy homes in those neighborhoods. Unbelievable. And we say that, we say, okay, well, that's not true anymore. Well, think about the impact today of that policy from many years ago. Because in the United States, one of the big ways people build wealth is through home ownership. And now you have families that, well, they built up value in their home, they sold it, and they passed that on, or their kids inherited the home itself, and it continues. And so that wealth built over generations. And now generations later, there is still an impact on the families who were denied that opportunity. And if you couple that, again, I'm giving you a U.S. example, and there are examples from other countries, please. There's so much research out there. In the United States, there was a bank that was primarily Black people depositing there, 90% Black. And what happened is it was not under the federal insurance. The bank failed, and they lost everything. And so now you have these families who have learned they cannot trust the bank. And guess what they teach their kids? And guess what their kids teach their kids? And now that has an impact today. in the United States, the Black community is underbanked. And we think, oh, well, it's on that. No, it's not. That's on all of us. That's an awareness for all of us to have. Please, Diane, I see your hand up. Go.
Yeah, just two other things I want to mention is the Black community doesn't trust the medical community because in earlier decades, they were using them for testing in ways that they weren't upfront and transparent about. And the other thing that was surprising to me is the whole highway system. Like here, I live outside of New York City, and when they put in the roads and highways, they cut off communities, underserved, you know, lower Black communities from grocery stores and from places where they can get to work. They made it really hard for them. Intentionally, a little bit, probably a lot. And so it's just amazing to even think the highway system, the way it was developed. We have Jones Beach, which is a public beach here, but the buses and public transportation can't take you there. So that was a way that they cut off some of the people that they didn't want to go use that beach. It's unbelievable
how systemic
and endemic it is to the yes. whole system. Yeah.
Yeah. Or even the research, you mentioned not trusting the medical community. LGBTQ going in for medical care and being flat out refused care. Are you kidding me? How is that even acceptable? It's unethical, it's immoral, and guess what? It's still happening today. And how can we be okay with that? And I know I'm giving US examples. Yeah, there's research in other places. Terry, I see your hand up before I go on.
Okay, I just wanted, in case someone hasn't opened their chat, there are some things in there. For example, Raphael suggests not just the Black people, but other cultures too. I would guess Latin Americans and Muslims, and I don't have the whole list, but it's broader than that, most unfortunately.
Oh, big time, yeah. The instances of religious, you know, crimes and persecution and that kind of thing, we can all think about those. There's research, and it actually so many different races impacted by this one. It, depending on your name, if you send in a resume, that influences how likely you are to get a callback. And that's true in the UK. It's true all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is, and to me, going back to the learning, do the homework, get online and do the research. What are the statistics? It's absolutely incredible. And it's scary because it's so built in to the system. So we want to be aware of that. Okay. Now, back to little old me, what can I, one person, do to start making a difference? So I got to get educated. How is this a challenge? Then self-assess and strategize. So when we talk about this, really looking at where are you at now? One of the things I did is look at my organization. Hey, where are we at? And so several years ago, I was going in and looking at who's on my team, who's the student body, who are we interacting with? How are we putting ourselves out there? And that's such an essential piece. I actually was really excited because when I started going through that self-assessment process several years ago and looking at my team, it was like, yeah, we had an incredibly and have an incredibly diverse team. And it wasn't something where I said, oh, I have to go get this diverse team. I never set out to do that. It happened naturally, organically. And to me, that's exciting because that's what we want. We want to know that it's really about the connection because we're human instead of it being about anything else. And self-assessing, where am I at with that? Who am I engaging with? Who am I interacting with? Who's on my team? Who do I support? Who are my clients? And evaluating that and then thinking about okay, what's ideal? What do I want that to look like? And how am I moving toward that? And getting intentional about it. And that brings me into the self-reflective practice. So I mentioned I was going to share a couple of things for this that I learned. One of them, I learned at the ACTO conference, actually. I thought it was a really great way of checking ourselves because we all have biases. They're conscious and they're unconscious. We may or may not know about them. Obviously, the conscious ones are more easily addressed. We know they're there. We can do something to work on that. It's the unconscious ones that get us, and we have to take time to figure out what those are, what's getting in the way. So in going through that process, one of the examples they told us, imagine starting with a new client. And when you're starting with a new client, what you're going to do is before you start working with them, take a moment and just do some journaling and write down what it is you know about them, who you think they are, what kind of a person are they, what's their experience, their background, whatever it is, as much as you can in terms of what you know about your client or think you know or can guess or extrapolate. And that's the big part. What are you guessing or extrapolating about that client? And then after you work with that person for 6 months, take a clean piece of paper and write about that client and who they are. And then get your original paper out and the new paper out, compare the two. What did you write before you really got to know them versus what are you writing now that you've gotten to know them more? Where are the differences? Because it's a fabulous tool for helping us identify the unconscious biases, the things we're unaware of. I thought that was a cool one. Another one that I really appreciated, they actually put us in groups. And so the first thing they had us do is write down 5 successes that you have had in your life. And so everybody takes a few moments, do this for yourself independently, and write down some successes. And then they said, okay, if you were a different race or a different gender or different sexual identity or orientation or whatever the difference was, and they gave us several differences, how would that have impacted your successes? And to really reflect back, okay, would I have had that same success if I were a different race, if I had a different sexual orientation, whatever it is, and evaluating that? Again, this really cool way of having that self-reflective practice. I'm guessing there's a lot of great self-reflective practices out there with this group. Who has thoughts, ideas they want to add to this?
Kathy?
Yeah.
So I don't have one to offer, but I mean, I think the two that you have brought up are great and ones that I'll consider adding for myself. But this whole topic of diversity brings up for me a question that I've gotten a couple of times and I haven't been able to answer it well. And the question is from potential coaches. So in a chemistry meeting, for example, where I'll get the question, you know, I'm a black man living, you know, working in corporate America, and that comes with a certain set of, things with it. And, you know, I can see that you're not a black man working in corporate America. How would you coach me differently than you would other people? And that question has stumped me, and I've gotten it several times. And I'm not expecting people to give me the answer to that, but I guess I just wanted to share with this group a little bit of my experience with that question, whereas I think maybe a couple of years ago I would have gone, well, I don't think I would coach you any differently. And since last year, my mindset has just shifted to much more of what you've been talking about here of, you know, remaining open and curious and trying to educate myself and become more aware of my internal biases and that kinds of things. But I still, when I come out at the end of that process, I'm not sure how I would coach differently. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe part of it is incorporating some of these self-reflective practices that you're talking about, but maybe there are other things too. So I just wanted to voice that.
Uh-huh. No, I love it that you brought it up. And I want to pronounce your name Guillermo. Guillermo. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, fabulous. So Guillermo, I recently had the privilege of being hired by a Black man as their coach. And for the specific purpose that with everything that's been going on in the world, they were, okay, what's my role in the community? How am I a leader in my community at this stage with where I'm at, with what's going on? And literally had that conversation with them, very similar to what you're talking about. Here I am, and I joke, please humor me, everyone. I call myself the fat old white lady from a retirement community in Florida because there's all these negative stereotypes associated with that. I'm like, and you know, here we are talking about this coaching relationship and this engagement. And of course, what was important to that person is that I be, as you were saying, open to the influence of context and culture. I think the added value is, in addition to being open to it and being curious, so I'm asking them about it, and we talk in coaching, I'm not supposed to be the subject matter expert, I'm there with process. So if I don't know, sometimes my curiosity questions help open up their own thinking and awareness. And then above and beyond that, I'm coming at it from probably a different perspective, and there may be value in considering that different perspective. Ultimately, in terms of the coach-client relationship, now ICF research, number one indicator of success is the rapport. Do we have that trust in that connection where you know I'm on your side? And I am here because I care about you as a person and because my job is to support you in you being successful. And I see you whole, capable, and it's your choices. So what's my job as your coach? My job is to ask questions so that both of us are really clear in terms of how being a Black man in corporate America influences you and influences your job, your work, your career, and to expand thinking and perspectives. And the way I can do that is explore yours and add to it and help explore others.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah. No, I think that's an awesome question. That's a really, really good question. Good God. Okay. So just being cognizant of time and also wanting to hold the space for anyone that wants to jump in. So if you want to jump in, please say so. And I'm going to bring up the next point, communicating openness. One of the things I did, and I'm going to tie this into that self-assessing, is go look at your own website. What are the pictures you're using? What's the language you're using? What does that say in terms of communicating openness? And I've made the mistake. Somebody wants to be identified as they, and I say he or she is like, oh my gosh, it's this ingrained habit. I've got to change it. We're all going to make mistakes. Welcome to the human race, everyone. We're all going to make mistakes. Is what am I doing? What am I noticing? How am I putting myself out there? How am I expressing myself in terms of the word choice, in terms of what I think is important, what I care about? What are the images I'm using, everything I'm putting out there? And is that giving a message? And what's the message it's giving? And of course, as much as we think, okay, I'm doing pretty good here, I'm conveying this, it's like, oh, wow, I totally missed something over there. So paying attention to how we put it out there. Go, Terry.
Building on that for a moment, excuse me, someone earlier on the chat asked if there was a template to create a cultural bio.
I have not seen one.
Thank you.
So to my knowledge, doesn't mean there isn't one. I actually was thinking about, I like the idea that if it's a tool you're going to use with a group of people to talk about what gets included. Because there's so many different pieces. You know, do I talk about being one of 13 kids, or do I talk about being a grandma, or do I talk about both, or that kind of thing? Because every time I hear someone else's cultural bio, it's like, oh, yeah. And I picked up something different that I feel like, oh, that would have been good to include. So I don't know of one. Does anyone else know of one, a template for a cultural bio?
If not, we should create one. And of course, it's only a prototype. It's only a template.
Yeah. No, I love. Okay. I love the idea. Absolutely love the idea. We can put it up in the Ethics Community of Practice on Basecamp. And here's the template for people who want to play with this. So, yeah. And I since we brought that up again, I want to throw something else out that I thought was fascinating. I brought that cultural bio up with a group of people. And I had some people, and by the way, definitely want to be aware. So I had people that were people of color. I had people that had different sexual orientation, and they absolutely hated the concept of the cultural bio. And here's what they said. I am so tired of talking about this and talking about this and nothing changing. I just want to live and, you know, just, hey, we're all people and let's just function that way. And so I loved the idea of the cultural bio when I first heard it. I was really surprised to get that reaction from some people, and I learned a lot from it, that this can be a great tool, and we've got to explore, is this the right tool for the right group at the right time?
And maybe it's a self-assessment of bias and awareness of self, and doesn't need to be broadcast on a resume. Also, yeah. Possibility.
Well, and coaches talk about, okay, do I put it on my website and on the About Me page? How much of this do I share? And we've even had the conversation within coach training, you know, is that something we want to use in class? Go, Raphael.
Yeah, so as a minority in this country, which I became aware of when I first came to college, because I had no clue, since I lived in a protected environment. I have a bias when I hear the word diversity. And my bias has been traditionally, you know, is this about people learning how they can be politically correct and not make mistakes while they still harbor within them the same feelings that I was confronted with as a 17-year-old for the first time. And of course, we all have biases. I mean, I think every human being has biases. It doesn't matter what color, shape, or form you are. But that's the thing. So for me, that's why it goes back to self-reflection and being aware of how we feel about other people when we are with them. Because I'm not interested in having people learn how not to make the mistake and how to say the right thing. I want diversity to be an effort for people to be self introspective and to gain awareness out of that. And for me, it boils down to the fact that we're all human beings. And the moment that I begin to see you as higher or lower, or see myself higher or lower, just to put it in those simple terms, I am emanating that energy, and that's not in tune with what I expect of another human being in the subject of diversity.
First off, Raphael, I think you're awesome. I got to work with Raphael all year last year, and we had so much fun. I think it goes back to how we see that word diversity. I like that you brought that up, because to me, I see it as, and actually there was a conversation in Basecamp about this, the word differences versus variances. we're different might imply one's better or worse than the other. Variances, to me, is the way they were explaining it, is like, okay, that's what I feel when I talk about differences or diversity. There's no right or wrong. Just like when we talk about personalities, you're not a right or wrong. There were variances. And every single one has value and is worthy. And it's about celebrating that and back to really being open and accepting and exploring it and having the conversation. I realize I'm running out of time. Let me pull up what we can each do to expand access, because I think this really digs into, can any one of us make a difference? Yes, we can. How can we do it? So think about what you personally can do. There are a lot of ICF chapters, for example, that are working with nonprofit organizations and providing coaches. There are also nonprofit organizations in your community that are serving people that can't afford to pay for coaching. And you can go in and volunteer and provide coaching for people that can't afford to pay for it. Another concept is the idea of a sliding scale fee. So, yes, you're in business, you're making a living, and you have people that pay you a fee for your services. What about dedicating some of your time to a sliding scale? So instead of paying you in the hundreds, it's maybe five. For example, instead of $500 working with an executive in the C-suite, and whether it's US dollars or a different currency, asking $5, which is almost nothing. It's not even minimum wage for us in the United States. If you translate to your currency in your country, the idea of just a token amount so they have an investment in that relationship. And what can you do with that? Collaborations. What other organizations or school systems or groups can you work with to increase access to coaching? We were talking about team coaching. What are the opportunities for group coaching within some of these communities? How can we, any one of us, increase access to coaching? In the coach training space, we talk about doing scholarships to programs, working with people in that way. And think about it on the individual level, too, in terms of individual coaching services. What is possible? And explore for yourself. And maybe you have a corporate client that wants to get in on this. And whatever they pay for your coaching services means that, okay, you pay me this much for my coaching session, and I will also do a pro bono session. So for every hour you pay for, I'll give an hour pro bono. And now the company gets to get behind that effort for increasing access to coaching. Get creative with what's possible. I realize we did use our time. We didn't even get to the case studies because there's so much to talk about here. I'm happy to hang around a few extra minutes if anyone wants to, and I know you have to also wrap up on time if that's appropriate for you. You tell me in terms of what you want to do, Kathy.
Yeah, I actually have a meeting right after this, so I do have to use the room.
Okay.
You need to go ahead and wrap up. And this has been absolutely wonderful, Kathy. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Good conversation. Let's keep it going.
Yes. Yes, yes. And we will see all of you or many of you in our next, our March class. So, Kathy, thank you. Questions, you all know how to get in touch with us, and we can get you in touch with Kathy and move forward.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.